I'm Stephanie Overbuck.
I'm Mel Wymore.
And this is Pot of Gold.
The world of the digital nomad is ever expanding. An explosion of remote work opportunities has given people the freedom to build all new kinds of lives in all different kinds of places. But what will be the impact of this growing movement on our society and on the environment?
In this episode, we are speaking with Jay Mendes, also known as the No Footprint Nomad. Jay has spent the last decade traveling and working across four different continents to cultivate a sustainable nomadic lifestyle. We ask him to share his story and the vision he sees of a freer, greener future beyond borders. Here's Jay.
All right, so my name is Jay Mendes. I'm from Portugal, I'm Portuguese. And I normally, when I tell a little bit about my story, I say that I've had three lives. I'm my third now. And my first life, I was living in Portugal. I'm an engineer, logistic engineer. I used to be an engineer, I like to say this also. I used to be an engineer and I worked, I had a nice career, nice car, nice job, all of that. And then I decided that I really always wanted to travel and to see the world, but I was postponing like a lot of people do. I'll do it. And there was a moment, it was a book that ignited my attention. I said, okay, I think it's time. Let's just go around, just see things and then come back to my first life. That's what I thought. So then I decided to travel, That was my second life, travel life. And I realized that what was supposed to take of a year, 1 year, year and a half, became something longer, and I was enjoying, and I was finding ways also to sustain myself financially. So I became a perpetual traveler in a way, and I've been traveling for now 11 years. So that was my second life. But in the middle of my second life, I volunteered for a project, the permaculture project in Nicaragua. And I met amazing and inspiring and really purpose-driven people, group of people. And I never met so many amazing people together in the same place. And I was lucky enough to spend a couple of weeks with them. And I realized that I've been kind of asleep most of my life. I was just enjoying life and not really worried what was going on and all the impact of everything I did and I was doing. And so since that moment, I decided that something had to be different in my life, but I was not sure yet. So I was not yet on my third life. Then I tried to go back. I went to Brazil. I tried to go back to my former life as a consultant at a big consultancy company, UI. And it just didn't work. I just woke up every day and it just didn't make any sense for me doing what I was doing and helping who I was helping and what I was doing in terms of help. I was a logistics expert, so just helping to find better locations for new factories. And even in that regard, it was a bad decision most of the time because it was based on taxes and not based on kilometers on the roads. So that meant that the impact in terms of our footprint was much higher. But then, yeah, you saved on taxes. So even that was not amazing. So I thought, okay, I had to do something different. I cannot work in something that is not aligned with my motivation, my purpose. So I decided from that moment on, I'll start my third life, and everything I was going to do in terms of work would be with positive impact to our society. So then I started my journey. I created a startup in Brazil. It was a group-owned style of company with other three other co-founders, and the idea was to give hard discounts for the good companies, not for anything that you find on Groupon. And then, yeah, just things went on, and I started to find out where I wanted to put my effort more in terms of impact, in terms of society. And I realized that I have two main passions, and that was kind of part of my life. One was, of course, impact and sustainability and in general. And the other one was this remote work, digital nomadism, and this free movement that was growing some years ago and now exploded, of course. And what attracts me on this second part is the impact it has in our society. So if you look at remote work or digital nomad as a tool to make our society better, you see people that are able to move to rural areas instead of living in big cities, better distribution of population. You see less travel, of course, because they don't need to travel so much. You see people that before they had to travel to find a job or because they were forced to, and now they don't have to. So when we think about nomadism, There's Nomadism 1.0, which was where people back in the day needed to find food and shelter and all of that. And now we have Nomadism because you want to, because really you want to change your life. So that's what attracts me in terms of Nomadism or remote work. So if, when I merge remote work and sustainability, those are my two passions. Those are the two reasons why I wake up in the morning and I do what I do. And what do I do? At this moment, I do events. I became, thanks to COVID in a way, event specialist or event focused person. And I organize online, in-person, of course, hybrid events that are either with sustainability or remote work or both. So I have a couple of events that I merge the two worlds that I am involved with. So that's it. I'm an event specialist based on these two simple topics of our society.
You are well ahead of your time, you know, with pre-COVID, you know, now everyone talks about working remotely and kind of tele-traveling, and now, so you're hip now. You're probably a little yes. different before that, right?
And you know what's funny? Before COVID, even some of my family thought that I didn't work for all these years. Yeah, you're just traveling, not even working. They thought they were like a hippie or crazy. And now most of people come to me also, tell me exactly what's that thing about remote work and how do I do that?
That's really cool. So it's interesting when you talk about sustainability and then also travel. So how do you balance out the impact of travel? We all know that travel is one of the biggest sources of carbon emissions. How do you deal with that conflict?
Okay, so I'm going to answer that question in two ways. First, the way that I think it's, now I feel it's more logic, which is a concept I learned not that long ago, which is the footprint shade. And that means if you compare your overall impact in terms of your footprint, it's like you're saying, if you have a climate scientist traveling three times in a month to go for a conference or to do a job or something, at the end of the day, it's probably going to have more positive impact to our society than someone that stays put but it's not doing much or is probably doing even worse on the day-to-day life. So if you look at your footprint shape, that was the concept there. I hope that in my case, because I'm talking and I'm doing events about sustainability, it kind of compensates overall my life, the trips that I need to do, and I'm a slow traveler. I'm not the original nomad that goes every week to a different city. No, I sometimes stay in Brazil for 2 or 3 years, so I'm very slow traveler. So that's the first answer. I think it's that makes more sense. But I can also say that's true. When I do workshops or do a talk, I always get that question. Oh, so you are no footprint. Oh, but so you don't travel, right? So that's true. There's an impact on your travel, and there's some rules that you can use that I use. If it's below 1,000 miles, I do land transport. Above that, I fly because if you study that, that's more or less the rule of thumb for that. And I try to mitigate as much as I can, but at the end of the day, yes, the answer yes. If you travel, you do more impact directly on that precise moment. But then if you think on the footprint shape, that's how I think it makes more logic, especially if you try to work on the field of impact.
You know, since COVID, you know, obviously many, many people are staying more at home, and there's been mixed reviews on this. Have you seen a huge influx of people interested in what you're offering and the idea of kind of remote work, travel, nomadism, and sustainability all combined? Did you see a growth there in that movement? And if so, what does it look like?
It's not exactly a growth, it's an explosion. And the reason for this is that even before COVID, there were like, I think the last number, like even in the US, in the world, like 700 million people that already part-time remote worker, not full-time all of them, but even part-time. But when you become a remote worker, you have a degree of freedom that's a lot of people don't realize, and there's a very good analogy a friend of mine told me once, is that our society is in a cage, right? Our lifestyle standard is like in a cage, and now with remote work, the cage is open, but a lot of people haven't realized that they can leave the cage, right? So there's a big potential in our society in terms of remote workers, in terms of becoming digital nomads or traveling more and even becoming even more remote. Now, of course, COVID in the beginning expanded a lot because it was almost mandatory to be remote. And now the rules are rolling back. Now a lot of companies are trying to roll back to what they were before. And what I've seen, and I have direct access to a lot of realities, is that that's not going to last for long, especially if you try to go the hybrid mode, which is some days at home, some days at work. That's even worse for the company. You have to have different processes, you have to manage two worlds, so either you go full one side or another. Maybe you just transition with hybrid, but most of the time you have to go either full remote or full in-person, that's it. And then you also realize that if you do it full on your office and then your competitor goes full remote, he has lower costs. He's going to get experts from all over. You are limited to the localized experts you can have and people working in the company. So you'll see that you're going to lose that fight. So bigger companies already realize that and they are not going to roll back completely. So what I'm seeing and what I'm seeing is like a full explosion of people going everywhere and finding ways of working, because as I said, you have the taxes, you have the visas, and you see more and more countries launching the nomad visas. Last week was Hungary and Montserrat in the Caribbean. Portugal now is also a very good plan coming. So it's booming because now there's more freedom of choice. There's no more restriction in terms of work. It's only your family and friends that can limit where you live. And then if you start to see smart projects that attract remote workers and give them a school, then even family won't be a problem. So this is, for me, I think it's a total revolution and it's just not going back to pre-COVID numbers, because it's just companies realize it's just not smart.
So there's such a thing as a nomad visa? Is that a thing?
Oh, yes.
What is that?
Yes.
It allows you to stay longer than 90 days or whatever?
Yes.
And then where do you pay your taxes when?
So that's the thing. So the first nomad visas that started to come, they were more like, yes, you can stay longer than the standard tourist period. Now, the next level of visas will be the ones that include the taxes. So you can have the total benefits, social security, everything that residents can have before you get your residency status, which is going to be the next level too. So that's what more countries are starting to look at, because it makes sense if you stay in a country for a longer period, you want to use all the services, but then you also need to contribute. So, but the first level is, yes, longer stay. There's countries with 1 year visas. Cape Verde, for example, 1 year visa, you can stay there for. Georgia has been doing that also for a while. So many countries now offer this concept of nomad visas. They also need you to apply for it, and they restrict you to the minimum amount of income that you have, because some countries, okay, we want to have remote users here, but we don't want the party nomads that just want to come here for cheap housing and stuff like that. They want to kind of, it's fair enough, they want to kind of find people that are actually going to invest in the country and have conditions to do so. So if you look at projects like Mike in Madeira, like my partner did, Gonçalo Hall, in the first nomad village in Madeira, and they had people already buying houses there, starting their companies there, and staying more than 4 or 5 months, which is the average that nomads stay. So that's a direct economic impact on society.
Right, which just raises a question, because I think I've heard that Portugal is offering 5 years tax-free to anyone who wants to start a business, right? But doesn't this also have sort of this negative backlash effect, like, okay, 5 years over, I'm going to move on, and then what?
So the plan is 10 years. 10 years.
Oh, it's 10 years, okay.
So try to stay in a country for 10 years and then leave.
That's a very slow travel 10 years though. But I had
I
a
can tell you for me, my biggest struggle in my slow travel is because if you stay for a shorter period, you don't connect with locals, so it's kind of easy to leave. If you stay like me, 3 years in Brazil, 2 years in Thailand, then I have all these strong connections, and it's very hard. Very hard.
Yeah, I believe that. Well, freedom is a very big word, you know. Some people fight for freedom and it's misused on a daily basis, I'd say. Anyways, but I have a question coming to the positive impact. You said you changed your life, the third life, towards like having positive impact on society or for society. What's the... I mean, I guess you mean for the planet, but as well on people, as well as on you, yeah, personally. So what's the impact on you? What has changed within you? What do you see has changed within people who start that kind of lifestyle?
So the remote work community or digital community, it's a part of our society and in a way represents our society. And there's a lot of people that are more interested in what's going on and others not so much. What normally happens when you start to travel and you have the freedom to stay longer, you see more things, you are more exposed to things than if you just go for 2 weeks. And I'm going to generalize and I'm probably going to be very unfair, but I feel that the community that is able to travel and have this degree of freedom will have the potential to be more aware and have more impact. That's my gut feeling, nothing scientific here. But again, if you are exposed, if you travel, and if you stay a longer period, I think it goes hand to hand. That's why when I do my talks about this topic, I say that the world is a university, right? And then if you're able to travel and you go to places and you, like if you want to learn salsa, well, why don't you go to where salsa started and then all these experts. And so if you use the world as a university, you have more chances of learning more what's going on and having more impact. So I want to believe that this is true.
Well, imagine that is true. And then let's imagine this is on a world or global level, right, that people can basically are free, financially free, to also do this, which I hope in the information age it will be at some point. And so basically you can choose according, actually we had this discussion the other day, according to your body type and what your health, whatever climate you like, you know, you can... completely free to choose wherever you want to go. And it doesn't mean that everyone is going to the south and like to have sun. I think there are other people who actually like the north much better. And it really depends on your whatever you like, right? Whatever you imagine your you would, you know, that is freedom, right? This is what you define as.
You don't even need to travel, right? You have the option not to stay where you are. Right. The difference is that, right, if you have a 9-to-5 job, then you have to stay where you are. If you have a remote job, you can decide to stay where because you're super happy there and you just go for normal trips, but you have that option. That's what I call freedom. You don't need to travel to be free. You just have the option to do that without any impact, again, in your life, which is job and family, friends, the two pillars normally.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's been a lot of studies, maybe not so many studies about nomadism, but there's been a lot of studies about how diversity, like when you bring diverse voices or diverse experiences together, you find more collaboration, more acceptance, more peaceful cohabitation, and you know, just a better world altogether, because you get to see that you're not so different. You are different in that there's a color different, there's a color palette and a texture palette of life, but at the same time we're interdependent and we really do care about the same things. And I think when you have new ways of connecting to other people and not so insulated, it can only be good for the world. I just had a question about these countries with these nomad visas, because you know we are an international couple, and we've had a hell of a time. How much time we're allowed to spend here? How much time are we allowed to spend there? You know, where are the taxes paid? How many countries are moving to this nomad visa where there's more flexibility? And could you name a few?
Yeah, so there. Pretty much everywhere. So the first original ones that were not technically visas, but they were like more flexible people to leave, was Southeast Asia. But now you have countries in Europe, from Croatia, from Portugal, Spain also launched a nomad visa. Italy is also doing the same. Hungary, Bulgaria. Then you have South America also, You got also Argentina is launching their project. Brazil is also preparing. So you can go pretty much every continent now and still find a nomad visa. And I know that more and more are coming, because if you think this is a no-brainer deal for any country or region or city, like, and you have one of the biggest references in the world of remote work attraction is Tulsa. I don't know if you're familiar with the Tulsa remote project. So Tulsa has been doing for some years now. They pay $10,000 anyone that goes to Tulsa to work remotely, and that has been a big success case. And if you think if you are in a country, why shouldn't you attract people that are able to spend money and not take local jobs? Like, why not, right? So more and more countries are realizing this, and they see the benefits. And of course, that's why they set up these levels. Okay, let's attract people that are able to buy more things or be wealthier or sustain themselves, not coming to our country or to the country to support themselves on social security. So it's for me, it's a no-brainer that any country should use this. They can decide the limits, and of course, but it's a tool of attracting skillful people to your country or region or city that I don't think it should skip it.
It's kind of a way, a next step to the world citizenship, isn't it? Which I think is already launched, but not fully legally accepted. So every one of us gets a number, and then I think it's already launched, isn't it? It was launched in like 2010 or something like that.
The initiative.
If you enter my website, I say my dream is to have a borderless society, because this is where it's heading. As soon as you have more traveling, as soon as more people are able to have this, and not just us fortunate people that live in a country that allows to do that, but everyone, then it's a way to get less borders and the need for that. Because,
well, I guess for some people, this is an absolute nightmare. Yeah, taxes, having more people coming into my homeland, taking my job.
Well, not taking your job. I think the requirement is that you have to be working already from somewhere else.
Okay, sorry, not taking my job, but still, you know, bringing a different language maybe into my area, which is, I think, for a lot of people, really frightening.
Yes, and house prices. I think the biggest economic impact is not your job, but your house. So you see it happening in Lisbon, for example, one of the epicenters now of a remote working community, is that the locals that cannot afford to live in downtown anymore. Gentrification is a huge phenomenon that happens with this. So this is a big problem, and it needs to be. So the countries that are taking care of, that are focusing on this type of, like, they need to be aware of ways to prevent that. One of the ways, and we are doing that with the government in Portugal, is to have a plan to attract remote workers, but to the rural areas. So imagine you want to go to Portugal, you go through a portal, it'll give you a menu of options. Oh, you want to live 40 minutes away from Lisbon in by the beach, or you want to live 30 minutes away but by the mountain. Okay, these are the locations that are already great infrastructure that you can live, and there's already prepared this co-working space and all that. So that's why we're trying to fight to avoid that happening. In terms of jobs, it's fine. Yeah, your job is secure, and if you want a better job, you can find a better job online nowadays.
There must be a lot of built infrastructure, you know, which can be reused and remodeled for nomads, so to say. Like, if you think of all the ex-Club Mets, for example, in this world.
Just to in line with that, in Portugal, we have a old state Club Med that is kind of old and rotting, and we had a conversation last week to use them to become hubs for this. So definitely spot on, Stephanie.
So Jay, what's the grand vision in your mind? You said a globe without borders, or Earth without borders. Do you see that? I mean, given all the economic disparities between countries, you know, the countries that you listed are largely countries that want to grow economically, really. So how do you see the grand vision over time playing out, that there's an equalization across the globe of resources and pay structures, or how do you see it moving into the panacea that you're looking for?
Yeah, so geolocation of your salaries is an important topic, because a lot of companies are facing this problem now, right? So if you have someone employed in San Francisco or someone employed in Kinshasa doing same kind of work, what are you going to do, right? Are you going to keep paying them both the same salary? One option, some companies do. Or are you going to geolocate the salary and pay less to the person in Kinshasa? Other companies are also doing. There's no consensus here. Some companies go one way, other companies go the other way. In my opinion, I think long-term, things need to equalize. There's no other way. Because this is technically removing borders. In terms of job market, so as much as you have people in San Francisco, like why should you live in San Francisco paying X amount of dollars, crazy dollars per rent when you can go even to your hometown in the middle of Midwest or something, right? So this will take time because this is, like I said, this is a total revolution and but still a big society. So my opinion is that this will lead to equalization, and there's other things in our society, like marginal costs of things and UBI, that also probably come to place in next years. But in terms of remote work, this will definitely lead to equalization of salaries and of income. There's no other way.
Yeah, it must be so much easier when you have sort of, you know, I can imagine a lot of people like grow up and, you know, sort of more traditional structures, and then the parents like push for, yeah, get a college degree, get a job, you know, get married, get a child, da, da, da. And then, hey, dad, I have this job and now I'm going to Brazil, bye. You know, I think it was so much easier, right? It's like a stepping stone or like a jumping jetty to like, bye, conventions.
Well, that's actually has implications on the family structures and things like that. Do you have any thoughts about that, about how, as we move toward this more nomadic distance culture, what's the impact on the family unit and how things operate daily?
So there's many personal and social impacts, and even if you don't think about parents, think about couples. Let's say one gets this kind of opportunity to work remotely from wherever the person wants, and the other is not able to do that, right? There's already a struggle there. And I was having lunch with a friend, and she said, oh, I need to go back home because of this, but my boyfriend, he wants to keep traveling. That's already a challenge and needs to be addressed and find ways, and I've done the same even in my relationship. Then another issue that comes out from working remote is mental health and isolation. There's a lot of concerns about this because, again, traveling is lots of fun, but then continuous traveling is not easy to manage and sustain. So that's something that needs to be addressed, and I've seen some initiatives trying to cater that. And then in terms of family, I haven't experienced that firsthand because when I became remote worker, so I was already on the road, and I was already older, and my family kind of accepted that I was not coming back soon, and now never say ever, but anyway, not coming at least permanently, right? I still call them my family base, but then I have my home base and my other bases. But I think the same as you see in couples is going to be an issue in families, and of course there's no solution, especially when you have different generations. It's difficult to be understandable when you live the life in a certain way and you expect others to live the same. So I don't have a solution for that. I only have concerns. But if you are a remote worker and if you are concerned about your kids, for example, let's say that you want to travel, but then your family problem is with your kids, not with your other family or older family members, then there's already solutions coming out, and there's already one in Portugal, which is to create a kind of a remote work location for remote workers to come, and they have a school integrated. So if you live there for 4 months and then you move to another location for 4 months, the education continues because they have another school with the same system that can continue the education there. So solutions for that is already coming for your kids, for your family, but not so much for your parents or something. That's a break there that I don't know how to solve.
Wow, that's interesting. Traveling family.
Yeah. It's almost like a coach. Yeah. A coach for society 3.0.
Well, for some people, I think giving the freedom to work and live wherever they want is quite powerful.
It's life-changing, of course, obviously, but at the same time, scary, because when you have too much degrees of freedom in your life, it means you also have to make more choices. Different from when you don't have so many degrees, then you don't have so many choices, just follow the line, right? And for some people, this is scary. So having this freedom is not to everyone. And so the same with remote work. Some people say, yeah, remote work is amazing, but it's not to everyone. It's true. The same as in-person work is not also to everyone. But that's something that nobody really discussed, right? How many people feel intimidated or they like to work in person with others. So, yeah, so, and other things that happen in person that don't happen in remote. So there's always yes and no's.
If there, so for is there any last, anything you would really like to say to the audience or something which is close to your heart you would like to bring out, Jay?
Yes. So I would say that based on my experience, especially because now it's so easy to find other alternatives or jobs remote. There's a lot of people that they have their full-time jobs, even if they are already remote, but they have their full-time jobs and they want to work with something more impactful, but they feel that they don't have time to do that. If you think in part-time remote jobs, remote work, that gives you a lot of options to you to work, even if sometimes Saturday mornings or a little bit in evenings. So you can start to work on something that makes you more happier and fulfilling more your purpose. And then maybe from that it will grow and then it can even become your main job. But think on this opportunity of this remote work as a chance for you to transition smoothly from the life that you have now that you might not be happy, but the life that you want to have later on. So this is a tool that not everyone sees that it's out there already. It doesn't mean you need to find a complete new job and get a new contract. No. There's many lighter versions of starting to work on something. And then you can see if you like and if you work, and then things can grow from there. So that's what I keep telling to people that are a little bit stuck and then see, oh, it's a big change. No, change slowly, because now we have the tools for that.
Wonderful.
Great.
Yeah. Good advice.
This episode, kind of the idea of borderlessness, kind of reminds me of our very first episode.
Right, Evelyn. Yes.
Yes, when she is basically
the global nomad,
global citizen. Right. She was a global citizen, and even was trying to decide where she should pay her taxes in what country.
Well, yeah, she found one and had quite difficulties too. They didn't quite believe her. Her story, kind
right.
of funny.
Because yeah, so I mean, but it brings up a question about this: is it possible? Do you think that we would have a global, borderless society, or for people who wanted to move around from country to country to work, could they pay their taxes to some kind of global center and then have it go to whatever country? Or what do you think? How do you think it could work?
Taxes, for sure, are the main reason I think why it doesn't work for so many people. Because it is always complicated to switch countries, and except you're rich, right? Then you can basically choose wherever you want to pay your taxes,
or not,
or less. So in that system, we know it doesn't really work. So why not? Why could we not think of having a global tax system? But you know what? I'm not a tax expert. And I'm pretty sure that kind of status quo is pretty difficult to tackle.
Yeah. Well, what do you think the nomad movement would have as an advantage for people who are not nomads? Do you think this is a powerful movement for people, not just the workers, but the hire people who hire, or the what benefits are there for non-nomads?
In my personal experience, is that when you travel for work, or when you stay in a country for a longer time, it actually opens another level of understanding, another perspectives you probably have not seen if you just come as a tourist, like, you know, in and out.
For them, or for
them as well as for the locals.
So you think it's,
right? Because
it's bringing the world together,
more time to get to know each other, you know, to experience. There are always cultural differences, whether one likes it or not, I think. And then to live this open-mindedness sometimes can be challenging.
Yeah.
Right? And it can also be thrilling, because it brings a new edge or a new perspective. And I think this is I personally love it. But then I guess you're also talking to the wrong person. I've never actually been on a two-week Club Med vacation.
But let's ask if Do you think anyone could be a nomad, or does it, is it really still a certain economic echelon that is able to do this?
I think the future will bring this kind of lifestyle more and more. And one nice thing about the pandemic, if I may say so, is that I think a lot of people were actually forced, or forced is probably the wrong word, but were pushed in doing what they felt was maybe not convenient for them before, was not accepted before, like basically staying home all day. I know there were a lot of other problems with staying at home, right? But I think for quite a few people, I also personally know some people of this, they would have never stayed home and just, you know, go on hiking trips with their families and actually kind of start enjoying their lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to accept it first.
Mm-hmm. But that shift has happened now.
I think that shift, a lot of people were kind of forced into shifting, and I cannot imagine that this is going away, or like, let's go back to whatever was normal.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But I think the options are so broad for so many people now, and it's going to be fun to see what the next 10, 20 years brings us. There's a lot going on.
We are an independent, listener-supported podcast
brought to you by Game Changers, www.gamechangers.world. For the price of one latte per month, you can help fuel our work and keep our content untainted by commercial interests.
For more exclusive content, join us on patreon.com or click donate on potofgold.world.
Thanks to our producer, Riley Paul. I'm Mel Wymore.
And I'm Stephanie Overbeck.
Thanks for listening.